The Summer Olympics open later this week in Tokyo, and this week marks 25 years since the 1996 Games came to Savannah. Today's Commute podcast delves into both topics as we interview Savannah weightlifting icon and 1996 Olympic torchbearer Michael Cohen, as well as journalist Paul Newberry, who will be in Japan to cover his 14th Olympics. You are listening to the Commute Podcast presented by National Office Systems. I am your host, Savannah Morning News opinion editor Adam Van Brimmer, and today is Tuesday, July the 20th. Today's episode is all about the Olympics, and we'll start with Michael Cohen, who is an Olympian as an athlete and as a coach, and played a significant role in the Olympics' visit to Savannah as home to the yachting events for the 1996 Games. We'll cue up that discussion right after I do the National Office Systems ad. Here at the Savannah Morning News, we recently reopened our offices, and it's been great to see staffers in person regularly again. It helps that we have a great space designed and outfitted by Scott Center's team at National Office Systems. And we're not the only ones. National Office Systems has been working with Savannah area businesses for 30 years and leverages its partnerships with suppliers such as Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Office Furniture to deliver a top quality product. Learn more by visiting www.natoffsys.com. Now, here's the interview with Michael Cohen. Joined on this episode of The Commute, the Olympic episode of The Commute, as I'm dubbing it, by Michael Cohen, who is a bit of an icon, not a bit of an icon, is an icon. You know, his family, his father Howard, are weightlifting icons in Savannah and certainly world-renowned and known very well. But one thing about Michael was 25 years ago, Monday, I believe July the 19th, Michael carried the torch as it made its way through Savannah on its way to Atlanta ahead of the 96 Olympic Games. Michael, do I have the date correct? And
That sounds about right.
And so tell us about that experience. Tell us what you remember most about it, whether it's carrying the torch or what the flavor was like in town.
Well, I tell you, it was a first of all, to get the notification that you've been selected to carry the torch is a great honor. Not only that, but I was selected to light the cauldron in Savannah after it culminated in Forsyth Park. So that was a double honor, so to speak. It's what Savannah looks like during St. Patrick's. That's what it looked like. The whole entire route was just packed with people. 6, 7, 8 deep, and then you get to Forsyth Park, and it was a giant park, and it was packed with people, everywhere. So it's a great moment. And there were two things that stuck out about that race, about that run. The first thing is that I'm a weightlifter. We don't run. Are you kidding me? We run to the dinner table. That's about as far as we're going to go. And so when I was selected, my wife jokingly said, my fiance at that time jokingly said, you better get in shape because you don't want to embarrass yourself walking down the road with that torch. And I said, yeah, you're probably right. So I actually started 3 months out jogging with a manipulated torch.
Okay.
And so, but one of the individuals that was selected to carry the torch was a young man. You might have remembered him. His name was Mike. And Mike was special needs, and he was selected to run the torch. And his mama was so happy. He worked out with me at the gym. She was just thrilled. And I remember her coming to the gym telling me that her and her husband had talked about it, and they were very concerned that he couldn't do that, and that they were very concerned that it'd be a problem. And so I told him, I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll train him to be able to do it. And so he would come to work out in the gym 3 days a week. When we got finished working out, I had taken an old broom and snapped it off, and the little bristles in the thing were swept over, looked like a torch.
Right.
And he would hold that up like you're running with a torch, and we would walk around the Anderson Cohen Center. They had a little road around that thing. We'd walk around that center, and it would start out, we'd walk 100 yards and lightly jog 50, and we did that, you know, for a quarter mile, half mile. And then we worked up the way we did it for 100 yards and then 200 yards. And finally, he could cover the entire distance holding his arm up, mm-hmm. and he was fine. So By the time the competition, by the time the event came, he was the one who was going to bring the torch to me, light mine, and I would finish it up.
Right.
So to me, that was a great honor, and it was very moving to see that young man turn the corner with the police and all the people hollering, screaming, coming up to me. Of course, he was exhausted.
I'm sure.
It meant that when he held a torch up to mine to light it, he was all over the place. But we got it lit, then I took off. Now, the rule was very simple. There's a big truck in front of you, and there's people running beside you, and there's the police escort. Stay behind the van. Just stay behind the van, Michael. Don't do nothing. Just stay behind the van. So I'm running behind this van. And what they don't tell me is the van is going to turn the corner to get into Forsyth Park, and it's going to take off.
Oh, boy.
They don't tell me that. And so when the van turns the corner and takes off, it speeds up. Well, what do you think I do?
Yeah.
I speed up. I'm not designed to speed up. I'm designed to go real fast and then take a nap. So by the time I got to Forsyth Park, I was absolutely gassed of epic proportion, just right. Totally wasted. But you can't walk. You got to go right. In there, you know, high-stepping it. I mean, so I'll never forget the fact that I was so tired and so exhausted, but so moved with the opportunity to take part in that ceremony.
So in training,
in training
the young man, do you think that track and field coach or cross country coach, are you kind of surprised you didn't get into that in the last 25 years?
Well, the young man has special needs. Mm-hmm. So that was not going to be something in his cards.
Right.
But
for you as a coach, I mean, if you're coaching him up, you're coaching your weightlifters up, coaching him up.
Well, believe it or not, I used a lot of that methodology when I got older and started working with my Parkinson's and essential tremor and those kind of people. Yes, I used a lot of that, you know, breaking something down into a very, very small piece, working for a goal. It did play a part in that position, sure.
Right. So for people that don't know, Michael was supposed to be on the 1980 Olympic team that did not end up going to Moscow for the 1980 Olympics because of the boycott called by President Carter. So I'm taking it that call in 1996, even though it wasn't a call to compete in the Olympics, but to carry the torch, may have had even a little bit extra special meaning to you. Can you kind of compare and contrast?
Yeah, no question about it. I remember when I got the call, and my fiance Cheryl was just beside herself. She said, you know, it's a tremendous honor. You were selected of all the people in Chatham County. You were selected to do this. And then they made the announcement. While we're in a special van, and they're taking the people out, and they made a special announcement in the van that we have selected Michael Cohen to be the one to light the cauldron. So no one knew what the deal was. And so my first thought was, my wife's not going to have a clue where I'm at. But lo and behold, they had taken care of that. So they had whisked her off to the place so she could see it. And it was very, very moving. It was a tremendous experience to stand on there and hold the torch up and then light the cauldron to signify the start of the games in Savannah. I mean, you know, we were very, very fortunate to keep Yachty. You know, we had the beach volleyball up until, what,
right.
4 or 5 weeks, a month before the competition, and they took that away from us. Mm. And I remember how devastated the community was losing that one sport. But the Yachty turned out to be a very favorable thing for Chatham County. I was disappointed that they got rid of the venue real quick, but it was a nice experience.
Right. The yachting, obviously there was a tremendous amount of excitement in town, even though the yachting took place off the coast and not a whole lot of people saw it. But can you kind of relate what it was like downtown when they had the medal ceremonies and all the other various festivities around it?
Yes, it was. You know, Savannah is world class, known for its hospitality. It's known for, you know, knowing how to throw a party and knowing how to throw a respectable party and a non-respectable party. They got the ability to do both. And I think Savannah showed the world that Savannah is a classy town. They can do something as moving and as memorable as an award ceremony for an Olympic gold medal as anywhere I've been in the world. And I've been very, very thrilled. I've seen a lot of medal ceremonies in the Olympics and several Olympics. But the one that they did down in downtown, I think it's because it was local. It was us. It was our community. It meant a lot. And I think that the athletes recognized the fact that it was a very special service that they did.
Yeah, and that was down on River Street, right? So it was Party Central. Yeah.
Oh, sure. That I can guarantee it.
So you mentioned the legacy and the fact that the yachting venue is a temporary venue and taken out. But when we look back at Olympic legacy now, we don't have a yachting center, but I know that the Anderson Cohen Weightlifting Center, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think some money went toward that. And then, of course, you have built your own Olympic legacy from there with Cheryl Hayworth. What were some of the other things that have happened since the Olympics that you look at and say that is because of what happened here in 1996?
Well, you had an explosion of athletes. You know, you got to understand there was no super team in Savannah at that time. It was a good team, but there wasn't any Olympians. When the Anderson Cohen was built, it was the dream of my father, Mr. Anderson, to have that center, to have a place where kids could go and train and be coached by world-class coaches. And being able to operate the facility has been a great, great privilege and an honor, something that we really take very, very close to our heart, mainly because it's got Mr. Anderson's name on there, my father's name on there. But during that time, after the Olympics, was an incredible explosion of interest in Olympic movements in Savannah. And then 4 years later, we had four of the team members going to Sydney. So, I mean, in a short period of time, it exploded with interest. And I think that has to do with the fact that the community had the facility built through a 1 cent sales tax and maintained the facility and still maintained the facility for the youth of the community. Now, over the years, the desire for high mom at the Olympics has kind of waned. It's waned because the county, I'll never forget, when we came back from Sydney and met in front of with the county commissioners, one of the commissioners, I'm not going to mention his name, came and he put his arm around me and said, "Michael, been there, done that. We'd like to see more outreach, more other programs dealing with other parts of our community." And the culmination of that took place in 2016, right after Rio, when I was asked by the Parkinson's Association to develop a program to help people with Parkinson's and essential tremors, you know, neurological concerns.
Okay.
And the GEM program, GEM, stands for Get Excited and Move, was born out of that, born out of the Olympics. That program is now massively supported in our community with hundreds of participants. In fact, you got me now on the phone mainly because I just traveled out of the area to meet with a gentleman that's 53 and has suffered from Parkinson's. And that's all related to that program that came from the 2016 Olympics, which came out of 1996. So it's amazing how it all works.
Yeah.
So we're now affecting people that are not Olympians, not world-class athletes, but individuals that could use world-class training so they can make their life a whole lot better.
That's amazing stuff. So the end of this week, we have another Olympics starting, the 2020 right. Olympics being held in 2021. And of course, was it 2000, 2004, 2008? I think those were the three that Savannah had, that Cheryl was at, and Savannah had some representation at. Can you kind of reflect back on those games and, and what are some of your favorite memories from those games?
Oh, wow. Well, obviously winning a medal in Sydney was a highlight. There's no question about that. I think 2004 was exciting because we had an opportunity to win a medal, but injuries messed us up at the games.
Right.
And, you know, it's not how well you handle success that makes an individual. It's how well you handle defeat. And I was very proud of our athletes. The way they handled themselves in 2004 would not be as successful as 2000. 2008 was really the down year for the athletes. You know, age is starting to creep up a little bit. We didn't have some of the younger kids involved that were ready for that level. And the world was changing. I mean, it was changing. And 2012 hit, and then it was nothing there. 2016 was really an unusual year for us because I was selected as the head strength conditioning coach for the wheelchair basketball teams, men and women, which, by the way, trained in Savannah
for
4 years going up to the Olympics. And both teams won gold medal in Rio. So that's they all trained at the Anderson Cohen Center. They all did their basketball practice at Savannah State and Hunter. And that team went on to win the gold medal. In fact, both teams, the men and women, the first time ever that's ever happened with the United States, won both Olympic golds. That's all athletes that are trained in here in Savannah. You had an Olympic day in Savannah in 2015 at Memorial Stadium, and five of the wheelchair athletes flew down to Savannah to participate in that. Obviously, all five of those went on to win gold medals a year later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty special. So when you think back of your Olympic experiences, what do people maybe not know about the Olympics that makes it so special for the participants and the coaches?
Well, it's the way you're treated. I mean, you are superstar athletes. You are outfitted with unbelievable amount of clothing and goodies and stuff like that, swag and everything else from every kind of venue you could possibly imagine. It's very, very impressive what they give you. In fact, I hate to say it, but I actually still have clothes that was given to me in 2004. I haven't even opened up yet.
Open the package, huh?
Just a massive amount of stuff. They take such good care of you in the Olympic Village. It is very, very impressive. You are the big shots for just a short period of time in your life. You are the most valuable, most important thing there is. And the Olympic Committee, our Olympic Committee, as well as the local organizing committee, they do a phenomenal job making sure that everything you could possibly imagine, including things you can't, is always there.
Will you watch the next couple of weeks? Will you be watching the weightlifting events?
I'm going to watch some of it. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, I wear a lot of hats. One of the things I've got to deal with is that I am the chairman of the USA Masters Weightlifting. That's for athletes over 35. Mm-hmm. And our Pan American Championships take place August the 4th through the 8th in Orlando. I will be in Orlando in August, actually July the 31st, to start setting up that international event. We got the 12 teams from around the area, 12 countries from around the area that will be competing, close to 500 athletes. So I'll be involved in that very, very closely. I don't know if I have a lot of time to watch anything. Obviously, I'll catch up on my cell phone, but I won't spend as much time as I normally do watching the games.
Right. Well,
this is going to be the television Olympics. There's not going to be any spectators.
Yeah. See, it'd be just everything will be on tape delay too, because they're so far. I guess
that is
they're
correct.
Ahead of us.
That is correct.
In terms of timing.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. We had the same problem in Sydney. Yeah.
Right. Great stuff. Well, Michael, thanks for taking the time and reminiscing with us. And I think I'm going to see if I can't dig out some old video footage of you huffing and puffing your way into the park. If I can't put it with the podcast.
Right.
But thanks so much for taking the time. And it's always good to talk to you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Right. Thank you and good luck.
Before we move from Olympic torchbearer to Olympic scribe and bring on Paul Newberry, I need to tell you about the best source for local news in Savannah, the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. We go in-depth on topics important to you, whether it's Savannah's city manager search or the best new restaurants around town. If you aren't a subscriber, now is the time to try us out. You can get full access to our digital content for $1 a month for the next 6 months. All those stories marked subscriber only on our website, this gets you behind that paywall. So dig under those couch cushions, check the pockets of those pants you put in the laundry, find some coins or some small bills and sign up today. Go to SavannahNow.com/subscribe now and sign up. We'll spend the balance of today's podcast talking with Paul Newberry, a sports writer for the Associated Press who has covered every Olympics since the 1996 games in Atlanta. He chronicles the aquatic events during the summer games, so he was poolside for the entirety of the Michael Phelps era. I talked to Paul about what it would be like to cover an Olympics without Phelps and what he expects from the U.S. swimming team in Tokyo. We are going to air that part of the conversation on the Thursday podcast. Today, Paul discusses what makes the Olympics experience special and why this year's games will be an Olympics unlike any other. With that, here's the Associated Press's Paul Newberry.
Joined on this Olympic edition of The Commute by George's own Paul Newberry, who works with Associated Press. He's based out of Atlanta. You've read his work in the Savannah Morning News for quite literally for decades. And
now I'm really feeling old.
And he is ready to go to Tokyo to cover what will be his, Paul, you said your 7th Winter Games, your 14th overall. And
seventh summer games and 14th overall. Yes, that's correct.
Right. So
boy,
that
definitely gives away the age there.
That's it. But we don't need to get any more.
Can't get
you started
can't get away from
like,
it now.
Yeah, you started covering it when you were in middle school, so don't worry about it.
I was going to say, I think I was around 10, so let's go with that.
So beyond the pool, I know that you'll be one of the few spectators there, right? Because there's not allowing any parents or no fans.
No.
And they're really limiting it down. And of course, we know in Japan, for a myriad of reasons, their vaccination rates are, I think you can count them on one hand, maybe two hands, and sort of in terms of percentages. What are you expecting when you get there in terms of just kind of the experience, and how different do you think it's going to be? It's already different because it's a year late, but how different is it going to be with all the precautions that are being taken?
It's going to be totally different. I've already kind of, I mean, it'll be unlike anything I've covered. And, you know, I think one of the things that's sort of kind of hokey, but is kind of cool about an Olympics that they sort of, you know, promote it as, and that you do see when you're at an Olympics, when you see people of different nations, you know, in these marketplaces and out on the town. And, you know, I mean, I distinctly have a impression of my family was fortunate enough, came over after the Beijing games, right at the end of them. And we stayed in China and traveled a little bit for the second, you know, after the Olympics were over. And just, we were in a market and a family from who had their son, I think was a track and field athlete. They were from Trinidad and Tobago. And, you know, the idea, right. They handed my son still has it on his bookshelf, handed him a flag of Trinidad and, you know, in a Beijing marketplace. You know, those sort of moments are kind of what the Olympics are cool. And none of that's going to be in existence here, because as you mentioned, no foreign fans are allowed. There's going to be no fans essentially in the stands. There will be VIPs, as they call them. And, you know, some of the big wigs, sponsor people, but, you know, there won't be no spectators essentially, right. And us in the media. So it's going to be, you know, we're back to what we remember here in the States, kind of at the last summer, you know, baseball games being played with, you know, in empty stadiums, and, you know, when NASCAR returned and there's nobody in the stands. And that's what this Olympics is going to be. And it's impossible to not say that it's going to be so different and probably a lesser experience. I mean, I think we've seen a lot of some of the big name golfers and tennis players have decided not to go. I think essentially because of that, you know, it's just not going to have that feel of an Olympics when you don't have fans there. I mean, none of these, you know, we're so used to seeing, you know, you mentioned Michael Phelps, and we all remember watching him, his wife and his mother and his little boy, you know, cheering him on, you know, and none of that's, you know, stands are going to be empty. I mean, I feel bad for Tokyo. I mean, they've spent all this money. I mean, the swimming venue is gorgeous. It's like a $500 million, 15,000 seat venue. It's going to be empty. And this was really what it was built for. I don't know that they're going to get a lot of use of it out of it after the Olympics, as is so often the case in these with the Olympics, but it's going to be empty for the most part. And I don't know if they're going to put, you know, cardboard figures and, you know, pipe in fake crowd noise. And we just personally, us in the media and pretty much everybody there, we're going to be pretty much quarantined. We're going to be working, but we're only allowed to basically ride the Olympic buses. We can't go. We're not supposed to get on any public transportation, you know, the famed bullet trains of Japan, you know, none of that. We're to get in, get out. Nobody can stay and do any like post-Olympic traveling, or, you know, even while we're there, we're pretty much supposed to stay in our hotels. You either stay in your hotel room or get on the Olympic bus to go to your venue. And that's, I mean, so I must see Japan basically from a bus window, will be pretty much the extent of the experience. I kind of sadly talked about, the experience itself, I could probably just be doing it here in Atlanta. I mean, it wouldn't be much different than if I was at a midtown Atlanta hotel, riding a bus over to the Georgia Tech Aquatic Center, cover the swimming, come back, you know, get on my bus, come back to my hotel. And Japan is under, I'm sure most people know, back under another state of emergency, which essentially they won't restaurants. I don't believe restaurants can. I think most of the bars have closed, or they have to close by 8 o'clock at night. So the whole feel of the city, you know, sort of the buzz you have during an Olympics will obviously not be there, because even the locals are being told, stay inside, don't go anywhere, watch it on television, you know?
Yeah, it's made every Olympics is made for TV, but this one even more
so. This is basically so the IOC can collect their $3 to $4 billion in TV money that they would lose out on if this was not held. So, you know, I think we're starting to see positive cases, and people are already saying, you know, God, is there any chance, you know, if all of a sudden a bunch of people, you know, come down with it, you know, are they going to, you know, stop the Olympic? I don't think there's any chance of that happening.
No, not on with whoever
tests negative. But I think it's going to definitely have this feel of everybody holding their breath for 2.5 weeks. And hopefully, you know, at the end of it, nobody's gotten really sick, and maybe most of the athletes have been able to compete, and we all, you know, get back home safely. So I think that's kind of the feel of it.
What do you have to show? I assume you have to show, do you have to take a test before you get on the plane tomorrow, or when you get to Japan, or how are they handling that?
I took one. I had to take one within 96 hours of leaving. So I went over here to a local clinic and took a COVID test Friday. Then I had to take another within 72 hours of leaving. I took that on the other day on Saturday. So I've got my two negative tests. Yes. And we have an app that has all our health information on it. Now it's not required to be vaccinated. I am vaccinated. So that gives me obviously some comfort, but you don't have to be. That made that very clear. And some of that I understand.
20 some hours on an airplane, right?
But actually though, I'm not, because I also have given some of this information to Delta. So I'm not sure exactly if you have to be vaccinated to fly on a Delta flight, perhaps, but, yeah, at least I do have that. But yes, even there was no distinction if you were vaccinated or unvaccinated. You still had to take at least two tests within 96 hours of leaving. I'll be tested again as soon as I get to Tokyo in the airport. And then I believe we're going to be tested every 3 days.
Yeah.
Once the Olympics start. And I think the athletes are being tested
probably every day. Right.
So every day. Yeah. So, this has been a little, you know, it's always kind of hectic packing for when you're going to be away from home for 3 weeks and going internationally, and you have to, you know, worry about the right plug for your computers and things like that. But yeah, this was a little more, you know, where can I get my COVID test? I got to get the results back quickly and, you know, load them into this app. And so, yeah, a lot more going into it in that direction. And the Japanese have been, I believe when we get there, we're going to be, you know, I don't know how they can keep up with all these people, but supposedly,
Yes.
They will have tracking. We will be tracked on our phones.
Oh wow!
You know, so if we, you know, if I had a 2 days off and somebody notices that I've taken a train down to Hiroshima, you know, to see, you know, the historic site there or something, if somebody found that out or I did that, I think then I could be deported immediately.
Oh, wow.
They would strip my credentials. So they've made it very clear that for at least the first 14 days that we're there. Because when you go into Japan, still, you have to quarantine for 14 days. Anybody who comes in from out of the country. But they are allowing us, since we're there to cover the Olympics, our quarantine is basically considered covering the events and staying in our hotel. So for 14 days, the first 14 of the 19 days I'm there, I am not supposed to do anything but go to the arena, stay in my hotel room. I think we're allowed to. Maybe there's like a little grocery store next door to the hotel that we're allowed to go get food.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. We're, you know, and you can't get on the subways. You're to only take like official Olympic transportation so that you're not mingling at all with the general public there.
Yeah. Well, sounds like it's going to be a surreal experience for you and the athletes.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it goes. So I know if I don't ask you this, I'm going to get a bunch of texts and emails. But since I got you, I have to ask you about two things. I got to ask you about the Hawks. I got to ask you about the Braves. The Hawks are done.
Oh, there you go.
They overachieved. I would say they overachieved. You were there for that run. If you had to, as you look back, what are your impressions of the Hawks? And then talk a little bit about the Braves and, of course, the Braves without their best player the rest of the season.
Yeah, this is almost like two different stories here. Yes. You have the Hawks, who are that was an exciting run. And I mean, once they made that coaching change, I mean, that was Trae Young is just a dynamic figure. Shame he got injured in that Eastern Conference Finals. Like, might have turned out a little different. Who knows? I mean, Milwaukee's obviously a pretty good team, but
yes,
that was a great run. And they're so young. I mean, this is one of those where you're literally looking at a team and thinking, you know, if they play their cards right here for them, as they have for the last 3 years, they keep that going. This is a team that could be a championship contender for the next several years, because they are very, you know, Trae Young is like, I mean, the whole core of the team essentially is like, you know, 21, 22 years old. And just a very exciting, I mean, they've got some decisions, you know, with the salary cap. John Collins, if he's, you know, do they give him a big contract, and what impact that has on, you know, building, you know, keeping the rest of the roster together. So that's their big decision. But I will say this, the general manager, Travis Schlenk, you know, they did a complete rebuild after 2017. And, you know, it's hard to find any wrong moves along the way. I mean, they've drafted, you know, beautifully. I mean, drafting, you know, getting Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, John Collins. I mean, these all draft picks. I mean, when you hit on that many, that's impressive. And then they made a great trade for Clint Capella, you know, gives them that great defensive presence, and a guy who's also only, I think, 27. So they're, I mean, he's pulled all the right strings for 3 years. And if he can kind of keep that going, kind of hold it together, you know, or make some little tweaks here and there, I see no reason, you know, that this was not a one-off like the 2015, you know, you sort of felt that team was sort of a special, like, veteran group that sort of kind of remarkably came together 1 year. But even when it was over, you know, and they made the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, you didn't feel like they were going to do that again, and they didn't come close to doing it again. But this team feels like just the beginning, not just a kind of a one-off thing. So, and then you've got the other hand, we've got the Braves. So that picture, not quite as promising at the moment. I don't know. It seems like when you've sort of seen what a team is, and for the Braves this year, it's been a team that wins two, loses three, you know, wins one, has a big win. You go, oh, they turn a corner, then they lose the next three.
Right.
You know, I think this might be what they are. And it's hard to see them. It's a division they could still obviously could possibly win and make the playoffs again. But I think it's more definitely a long shot, and especially now with, you know, the injuries they've had in Acuna and not knowing what's going to happen with Ozuna and his situation off the field. You know, and Soroka not able to come back. They all of a sudden kind of a lot of good fortune they've had and building a great young team as well. You know, is all sort of all the bad luck seems to have sort of hit this year.
Right.
And I don't know. It just at this point, we're way over halfway into it or past the halfway point. And they've just looked like basically a 500 team at best.
Yeah.
And that might be – I don't think that's going to be good enough to win a division. So they're not going to get in as a wild card. So I'd say their playoff chances, you know, are definitely not that run of division titles is definitely in some pretty serious jeopardy.
Right, right. Well, that will just mean we can get the football sooner. And so we'll have to have you on. We get closer to Labor Day. We'll have to get you on and talk some football.
By the time it's amazing when I get back from, you know, you talk about, we were talking beforehand about how short the summer has seemed. And I think because of weird schedules and seasons ending later than normal or starting, you know, that all of a sudden I get back from Tokyo, I think on like August 8th. And I mean, NFL training camp has begun and colleges are reporting and we're getting ready for football. So, summer's about over.
Yeah, that's it. Well, safe travels and keep your head down. And we'll look forward to reading your work from Tokyo. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Hey, great talking with you, Adam. Have a great next few weeks and tune in there on NBC.
There you go.
My thanks to Paul, and if you want to hear him preview the swimming competition, be sure and download Thursday's commute. That's it for the Tuesday edition. Thank you to our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Please support them as they support this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of The Commute and want to hear more, download archived episodes on your podcast app by searching The Commute with @SavannahOpinion. Thank you for listening.